This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
The Guardian. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Politics Weekly podcast. I'm Frances Perridin, a reporter in the politics team here at The Guardian. This week we'll be focusing on the sexy topic of young people falling off the electoral register and the effect it will have on the campaign to stay in the EU ahead of the referendum. It's actually more interesting than it sounds, I promise. Pro-EU campaigners say that recent reforms to voter registration means that as many as 4 million young people aged between 18 and 24 could be prevented from voting in the upcoming EU referendum because they are not on the electoral register. This, they say, will have implications for their pro-Europe campaign, or the Innies, as I will be calling them for the rest of this podcast. Recent polling by YouGov shows that 64% of under-25s favour staying in the European Union, compared to 23% who want to leave, while 52% of over-60s want to leave the European Union, compared to 43% who would vote to stay. Earlier this week, I spoke to Labour MP and former Labour Home Secretary Alan Johnson, who will be heading up his party's In campaign, and Green Party MP Caroline Lucas, who is on the board of Britain Stronger in Europe and the Alternative In campaign.
I think a pitch about Europe not just being the provider of important standards like food standards or cleaner beaches or cleaner air, but Europe about being who we are, whether we think we will be better able to tackle big problems like climate change better if we work together, that I think is a much more compelling argument than the narrow facts and figures. And so, you know, I think people are well aware when they look at the refugee crisis or the climate crisis that to try to tackle issues like that from an isolated perspective is going to be much, much harder. So I think we want to tap into the sense that many young people have of being confident and outward-looking and positive about working with others. That, I think, is the kinds of values that we want to stress in the campaign, as well as the more narrow economic arguments.
Is there a risk that young people who may normally have been quite pro-European have looked at things like Greece and TTIP and might not be so sure anymore?
I think there is a risk that people look at Greece, they look at TTIP, and they draw the conclusion that the EU hasn't been playing a positive role. And I have a great deal of sympathy for that position. But I think we need to unpack it a bit. TTIP, this transatlantic trade and investment partnership agreement, a secretive trade agreement between the EU and the US, is undoubtedly a bad thing, not least because it contains measures that would allow private corporations to sue democratically elected governments. But the fact is that it's individual nation states like Britain that is pushing that agreement most of all. And indeed, in Britain's bilateral trade agreements, they are already putting in that same investor-state dispute mechanism, that same ability for companies to sue governments. So the idea that we'd be better off by turning our back on Europe and thinking that we're going to get a better trade policy by sticking with Britain, sadly, you know, the evidence points the other way. And similarly with the situation in Greece, what's happened there in terms of the imposition of austerity by the European Central Bank and others absolutely is wrong. But again, it's individual member states like Germany and their intransigence that is forcing that on Greece. I don't think we should lay that at the door of the EU institution. I remember a time when the majority of EU governments were progressive governments. There was a majority, for example, of green environmental ministers, and we had some fantastic green environmental policy coming out of the EU. So what we need to do to change the EU is to make sure that we change the individual governments. Those are individual fights we need to be having in the member states that make up the EU. But don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't throw out the institutions that allow us to work together to try to improve both the European Union and the wider world.
And how you work to get young people engaged in that debate?
I think for a lot of young people, they're already pretty much convinced of the fact that their lives are inextricably bound up with a wider European Union. They've travelled across the EU, they might have studied in the EU, they've got friends who've come from the EU. And for them, I think it's really just part of who they are, an outward-looking, progressive. I think the way to engage them is not to fight the battle simply in terms of qualified majority voting or whether or not their roaming charges are going to be a bit cheaper in Europe, but actually celebrating things like freedom of movement, not just on the economic basis, but on the grounds that it unleashes human dreams, human potential. So I think if we can tap into a wider debate about what the European Union could be, what values it could encompass, what we want to look like as a society, then I think that would be possible to build a different kind of vision of Europe, the kind of EU that we want, rather than having to, you know, debate the minutiae of some of the more technical parts of the European Union.
I think young people get this much more than perhaps an older generation. This is an increasingly interdependent world. We are united with 27 other countries on our continent. The initial impetus for this was two world wars in the last 100 years that began in Europe. Since the European Union was formed, in part to stop that happening, George Orwell is better than World War, there hasn't been any wars that begun in Europe. And military dictatorships in the south, Portugal, Spain, Greece, totalitarian regimes in the east, have all gone without a shot being fired. And those countries have come over to a system of democracy, of law, of rule of law, and they've done it in a peaceful way. And that is largely because the European Union exists. So that's one part of it. The other part of it, this is a trading bloc of half a billion people. Biggest trading bloc in the world. For our companies exporting to Europe, this means that they've got, you know, no tariff barriers, no non-tariff barriers. They can export across countries without all the relevant or necessary paperwork. But it also means we can solve problems like climate change, like energy security, like policing, terrorism, across borders, which we can't solve within our own borders. And if you're looking at science and the ability to have effective research, 28 countries coming together as part of that project is amazing in terms of what we can do in dealing with China and America. So research and development and the importance of science in this will be a crucial argument made by scientists and by people in higher education. And taken altogether, the alternative for Britain after 40 years to pull away from the European Union and go off into what? Some kind of splendid isolation? I think most people see that as being a very cold, lonely future for this country. And, you know, the people who matter are the people who will form the future of this country.
You've expressed concerns about the effect the new system of individual voter registration will have on the numbers of young people voting. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
The problem is that the government changed the legislation in the last parliament. And now, instead of households registering all the people in them to vote and anyone who's coming up to 17, and universities and colleges registering all of their students, it's now an individual system. Every individual has to sign up individually in order to be on the electoral register. So that means in households it's not so bad. No one can sign up for you. Each individual has to do it. But for anyone who's peripatetic and moving around, particularly students, it's a big problem, particularly as now the university can't sign them up as well. So we calculate that there's around about 4 million 18 to 24-year-olds who are not on the electoral register. And 1st of December is the closing date. And if people aren't on the electoral register on 1st of December, they won't get a vote in any of the elections that are coming up in the following 12 months.
You're heading up the Labour Yes campaign. What will you have to deal with this problem?
Well, I actually think whether I was heading up the in or out campaign, it's important for young people to register their views on this. All the signs are around the demographics here that the younger you are, the more likely you are to vote to stay in the European Union. I mean, so I'm particularly interested. So really need a big push over the next 6 weeks to get this sorted out. And to at least bring the figure down. It's around 30% of all young people not registered to vote at the moment. And if you look at the demographics, the older you are, the lower that figure, that statistic is. There's a very tiny percentage of people over 55 who are not registered to vote. So it'll be a distorted election result if a large block of young people are excluded because they haven't registered.
More from Alan Johnson later. I'm joined by Megan Dunn,
the president of the National Union of Students, who is also on the board of the Britain Stronger in Europe campaign, Martin Edebor, vice chair of Young Fabians, and Oliver Sidorchuk, a policy coordinator from Bite the Ballot, a campaign to inspire young people to get involved in democracy. Looking around the table, we're all reasonably young. Martin and Meg will be actively involved in the Stay In campaign,
yes.
Head of the EU referendum. So I think we can talk about this subject with some authority. Oliver, I'll turn to you first. Can you give us a little bit of background on this situation with young people falling off the electoral roll? How did this happen?
Sure. So in a nutshell, the coalition introduced the changes from head of household to individual registration last year. The proposed changes that are before Parliament at the minute is to bring forward the date at which that we move to the new register, which has effects on the boundaries eventually. And the worry is that with so many millions of young people not on the register in the first place, the potential drop-off that this proposed change will have in December, and the really alarming reduction in the number of first-time voters, so-called attainers, who attain the age of 18 in a register cycle, that's dropped by 47%. We've been trying to campaign with and alongside the government and in the face of government over the last 2 years to make sure that this transition didn't do exactly this. And the no-brainer suggestions that we've been suggesting have still not been implemented. Registering in schools, encouraging students' unions and societies to really take control of registering themselves at university. But more generally, active citizenship and political education in every school so that people leave education understanding how to be change makers.
And 1st of December, that's not very far away. So what does everybody need to do in the run-up to that?
Firstly, I guess we do need a registration push. Bite the Ballot runs National Voter Registration Drive, which is in February each year. But with this proposed change in early December, registering and confirming that you're registered, not worrying if you might be, is absolutely crucial in the constituency that you want to vote for.
And Meg, how will the NUS be contributing to this drive to get people to register?
Registering young people to vote has been something NUS has played a massive part in over the years, and we work with student unions who are closest to students on the ground to run vote registration campaigns, and we run competitions to see how many student unions can get to vote. But I think there is a question around what universities and colleges can do.
Because Sheffield University in particular did something quite different, didn't they?
So Sheffield University made it part of their registration process, so when you registered for your course for that year, you were given the option to be put on the voter register, and that's a massive difference, and it means that we are seeing loads more students registered to vote there. But the problem is with the switch to individual voter registration, students who were once mass registered in halls by their institutions have now fallen off that register, and so this is a process of making sure that those students' voices aren't lost in this debate.
And Martin, I know you can't speak on behalf of Young Fabians. You're speaking in a personal capacity, but how will you be working for this?
Yeah, so I'm going to be, first of all, engaging with other youth groups within the Labour movement, so Young Labour, Labour students, London Young Labour, to try to engage young people within this campaign. Also, you know, pointing them towards other organisations like Bite the Ballot and trying to encourage them to sign up and also get involved with the EIN campaign. In addition to that, I'm going to be working alongside parliamentarians within the Labour Party in terms of trying to coordinate an effort among our activists to also get involved in the EIN campaign and just help to provide the resources of people on the ground to go out, campaign and spread the message of EIN.
And Young Fabians and the Fabian Society generally is closely linked to the Labour Party,
yes,
which has recently seen this huge surge in membership, specifically among young people.
Yeah.
How will you be trying to make the most of that?
So what we're going to be trying to do is utilise that enthusiasm we've seen from the Corbyn campaign and the huge amount of people who have signed up to the Labour Party, basically trying to engage them, trying to turned them from members and supporters to activists on the ground. And that is, you know, directly related to this EU campaign, because if we can tap into some of that joy that we've seen from the Corbyn's campaign and actually funnel that into the In campaign, it can help us tremendously. So we'll be looking at how we can work with lots of our new members, engaging them in the political process, providing some political engagement, and that's a role for the various aspects of the Labour movement, from the trade unions to the Labour Party to affiliated social societies such as the Fabian Society and the Young Fabians.
That joy that you mentioned links into this next question. We saw the launch of the Britta Stronger in Europe campaign on Monday, and it was, I think it's fair to say, quite dry. Are we worried, or are you worried, Meghan Martin specifically, that the campaign will end up focusing too much on kind of economic security arguments and will turn off a lot of young voters?
I think that's one of the things that I see as NUS's role in this campaign, and part of my role on the board as well, is to make sure that we're talking about the things that students in particular care about. And when we talk about what EU membership means for students, we talk about what education means to students, and actually understanding that a wide range of perspectives, of meeting new people, of understanding different ideas from different places is a hugely important part of education. And actually, if we can help students understand what they would lose if actually EU membership was lost and that freedom of movement for students became harder, we can start to tap into things that students really care about, and that is, what is their educational experience and what does it mean for their friends and their classmates who will be affected by this? And I think that's the key, is this isn't just about economics, and of course the economics is hugely important, but there's a huge deal of social good that comes from being part of the EU, and it makes a massive difference to both education and society, and we have to really start talking about that.
Yes, this is a huge worry for me in particular, because if we have a campaign which is just about numbers and it's very technocratic, it will turn off a lot of young people. And I think what we need to try to do is, as Megan said, make the kind of emotional argument for being within the European Union, you know, explaining to young people that we are part of a wider community in the globalised world, explaining to them the cultural benefits of actually being in a European Union, as well as the economic arguments. And if we tap into, you know, that emotional connection that we all have with the wider European community, I think that will definitely help. Because as students, just throwing out numbers and figures won't be helpful. We need to explain directly to young people how being part of the EU is a benefit to their lives. And if we make that argument, I think we can be successful in encouraging young people to engage.
New technology is going to play, social media is going to play a big role. The last time a referendum was held was virtually when we went into the European Union. I was in my tank top and flares in 1975. There was no social media. You know, things have moved on. And we saw in Ireland with the amazing campaign for gay marriage how important social media and young people who generally live their lives on social media are going to be to this. So we'll have a lot of expertise in that area as well.
And generally, do you think there's any room for the In campaign to be complacent?
None whatsoever. It's a plebiscite. You never know what's going to come out of the plebiscite. You can't... You know, you can see all the polls and all that. I mean, I was talking to a guy who ran a Swedish campaign in 94 to go into the European Union, where young people were crucial, by the way. And he was saying, you know, a week before the referendum, the no vote was 10 points ahead. In the end, the yes vote won it by 6 percentage points. These things move around. There'll be a lot of fear put out there about, you know, about immigrants, about free movement of labour, about refugees. That will be some of the No campaign will major heavily on that. And that can be a potent political force. We have to counter that. We have to be on that case and arguing just as strongly, not just that, you know, the world has changed and you cannot stop movements of people around the globe. What you can do while you're in the European Union is... have an acceptance that there is a way to deal with this refugee crisis if you deal with it together. And Britain still isn't playing its part in that. But, you know, we can't go off into a fortress where we'll never be troubled by any refugees, if that's the kind of world you want to live in. I don't, but you're not going to find it if you leave the European Union. And indeed, all the countries that are in Europe, but not members of the European Union, which is only three, Norway, Liechtenstein and Switzerland, all have to accept free movement to do even trade with Europe. So they accept everything that the European Union does, but they have absolutely no control over those decisions because they're not members.
And Oliver, you're neutral in this debate. How do you think each side needs to be operating in order to get maximum impact on young voters?
I think having been at the launch of the In campaign this week, we weren't invited to the Out campaign launch for some reason. It's surprising that there's so little political education out there in general. Personally, I have no idea about the benefits of being in or out, and I'm someone that works in politics every day. I have no idea how to vote if the referendum was tomorrow. Put yourself in the shoes of the 17-year-old who may be turning 18 if the referendum is actually fixed for when that might be. I have no idea. That young person, you know, may have no idea who the Prime Minister is, may have no idea that you can register to vote from 16. How on earth are these campaigns going to get their messages in a way that is relatable and interesting to young people? And it's not through sort of tokenistic stuff, because young voters, young people care about exactly the same issues as everyone else: jobs, housing, the future economy of the country, health. The campaigns have got so far to go at this point that, I mean, I'm just interested to know what their engagement tactics are, and whether they involve schools and how they are going to involve universities.
Mm. Martin and Meg, the innies are the ones making the most noise about this issue of young people falling off the electoral roll, and that's because of the presumption that young people, if they vote, will vote to stay in. Is that a fair presumption?
I think, overall, I do understand why people have that perspective, because, you know, young people are generally like the idea of travelling to Europe fairly easily. They're more kind of open-minded and malleable to Europe. However, I think it is a big assumption, and we shouldn't just assume every young person does want to stay in the EU, and we have to try to win the argument. We shouldn't take young voters' votes and thoughts for granted, and it's very important for the In campaign to, you know, engage young people, treat them on parity with adults, and try to give them the reasons why we think, you know, we should stay in the EU. And I think that's crucial. We should not take their votes for granted at all.
Yeah, I think that issue around taking young voters for granted is really important. And I think the In campaign has to be really careful to not do that. In terms of whether young people overall support membership of the European Union, I can only speak from sort of an NUS perspective and from students. And our conference voted overwhelmingly to stay in the EU. But it was very much on those messages of what does it mean for freedom of movement in the European Union, and what does it mean for education in the European Union. And we have to start talking about the things that young people care about and things that students care about, and not just assuming that they'll vote in the way that a campaign wants to. But I think there is a broader issue around why it is that it's so important that we engage young people and students in these debates. And actually, it's much less about a single result and more about engagement in society and in the future of society. And actually, if young people in particular don't feel compelled to vote in an issue that can change the nature of society for the next however long, that's really damning indictment on the political processes within this country. And I think we have to look at a system which, if it's not engaging young people, we have to say is fundamentally broken. And so I think this is a broader the issue of getting young people to vote has to be broader than simply will they vote in or out. It has to be about how do we ensure that young people are engaged in the future of society. And I think that's the broader point as well.
And Oliver, do you think this issue of getting young people to vote, will it have a big impact on the result of the EU referendum, do you think?
I think it could do. I think, as ever, the youth vote, so to speak, it's not a term I really enjoy using, really, but when you talk about potentially 7.2, 7.4 million young people in the UK, and then you factor in perhaps when you're thinking about students, the number of international students and EU students, if they get the eligibility to vote, it's huge. It's a huge sleeping giant that we rely on extremely poor statistics every general election cycle that say it's gone up, it's gone down. Who knows how big the potential impact could be. The chances are, though, that it could be the youth vote that swings it. I would like to think that if the politicians realised how much young people can potentially contribute to a debate, picking up on Megan's point about how impactful the EU referendum is going to be on their whole lives, talking another 50, 60, 70 years, it could be incredibly powerful. And I'd quite like to see this government, you know, once they decide where they stand on this, whether or not David Cameron gets his concessions from the European Union or not, to actually realise, oh, after 5 years of not putting a premium on getting young people and students registered, that they might realise a couple of months to go before the election deadline, the referendum deadline, we need a huge voter registration drive. And that's why we do National Voter Registration Drive. We didn't ask the government's permission to do it. We saw that there was a gap and we inspired about between 5 and 700,000 people to register in the last general election cycle. That needs to happen again. It needs to happen again before this December and, I would argue, before the date the referendum's set.
Do you think lessons could be learned from the Scottish referendum, where huge numbers of young people got mobilised and were interested in what was happening?
Yeah, I think that's the best case that we've got. It's used by the Votes at 16 campaign to push their argument, but in terms of inspiring turnout, if politicians are able to talk to young people in a way that isn't patronising, focuses on the issues and focuses on their future, then guess what? The SNP weren't doing anything. You know, it's not rocket science. The SNP hadn't tapped into some secret formula. They were talking to young people as adults, which of course they are, in terms of being sensible and informed voters. And they had education in schools. They had a huge civil society campaign. They had voter registration drives on the street. And it can work. It could work in this setting as well.
Well, that's a nice way to end the show. That's it for this week. And thanks to my guests, Martin, Meg and Oliver. It's been a pleasure. The producer has been Rowan Slaney. I'm Frances Perrodin. Thanks very much for listening.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.